Hello, fellow Earth folks. I'm Annie Gigg, GYG, here on CFRU 93.3 FM and CFRU.ca, wherever you are in the world. Warm welcome to Better Me, Better World, the show for growth-minded changemakers, difference makers, and happiness makers. At the end of the previous episode, I said we'd next be considering the power of growing older. Of course, growing older is something that absolutely every living thing does. It's inherent in life. The Oxford Dictionary defines life as the condition that distinguishes animals and plants from inorganic matter, including the capacity for growth, reproduction, functional activity, and continual change preceding death. That continual change preceding death involves growing older. You and I are growing older from the moment of our conception. In early life, it's a positive, exciting thing. The fetus has grown to the size of a pea, now a walnut, now a baseball. The infant is growing in length and weight. The child can't wait to grow old enough to go for a sleepover, play soccer, get a driver's license. The young adult is eagerly anticipating getting their own place, getting a job, getting married, growing a family. The not-as-young adult is looking ahead to promotion, a larger home, retirement, and endless vacation. And then, the retired adult stops eagerly anticipating the future, growing older. Sometime after retirement age, I'd say, too many people begin to consider growing older as nothing more than a fate a little less terrifying than its only option. I contend that growing older can be eagerly anticipated, whether you're 8 or 88. Why? Because growing older can be empowering, no matter what age you're at. I say can be, rather than is empowering. As with any rewards in life, happiness, fulfillment, meaning, and purpose, etc., empowerment, which embeds all those rewards, happens only if you're open and receptive to it. My intent in doing this episode is to plant the seed of the idea that growing older can be rewarding throughout all of life, not just up to a certain point. Of course, at the time of sharing this episode, I'm one day shy of turning 69, and so I can say I'm sharing from personal experience, but that's true only up to a point. I don't actually know how I'll experience being 88, should I have that opportunity. So my talk about growing older beyond my present age is obviously speculation, not experiential. But based on where life has brought me so far, I feel confident in my speculation. Before planting the seed of the idea that growing older can be empowering until the end, I'll talk generally around the topic of growing older, of becoming old. Am I old? I don't feel old. When I was 8, though, 69 would definitely be old. In fact, a short while before preparing this episode, I had participated in a tag-like game with my 9-year-old great-nephew, Max, among several others, including my sister, who's 4 years my senior. After the game, Max came up to my sister and me and said, "You old ladies did great!" That might have the sound of a backhanded compliment, but I know Max was simply saying it like he saw it. That was the first time I'd knowingly been referred to as an old lady. And of course, I looked the part, with my pixie cut salt and pepper hair getting ever saltier, my facial wrinkles more pronounced in bright afternoon sunshine, my eyeglasses having replaced my contact lenses, and my running speed for playing tag not quite up to what it had been once upon a time. This old gray mare, she ain't what she used to be, but in all the ways that really matter, she's better. There are many, many people, however, who do not see growing older as growing better and will do what they can to postpone at least the physical evidence of aging. Says Statistica.com, the global anti-aging market was valued at around $62 billion in 2021 and is expected to increase to some $93 billion by 2027. The headline of an article at Fortune.com reads, "The 45-year-old CEO spending $2 million a year on anti-aging is probably wasting his money," longevity expert says. The article quotes Dr. Shoshana Ungerleider, an internal medicine physician in San Francisco and the founder of And Well, a nonprofit focused on reframing the end of life. Unger Leader says, as much as we would like to be able to control our fate, it's just not possible. Many of us carry genes that can undo all of our best intentions. In the same article, Dr. Andrew Steele, longevity scientist and author of Ageless, The New Science of Getting Older Without Getting Old, says, further, the human body is not meant to live well past 100, and even research on centenarians show there is a strong genetic factor to their long fate. He continues, you just can't exercise your way to living to 100, let alone to the world record-breaking 122 or something like that. No amount of diet or exercise is going to get you that magical combination of genes. End of quote. I've never had a compelling desire to try to look younger. Towards the end of my professional career, in meetings with my peers, I'd literally be the only female of many in the boardrooms or council chambers with undyed gray hair. My mom, being my role model in many ways, aged 96 at the time of this composing, never dyed her hair, and to this day she retains hints of her once dark brown, almost black mane. It's never crossed my mind to get a tuck here or a lift there. When I look in the mirror, I certainly see the 69 years of wear and tear on my bod that's been engineered to last up to a max of about 100 years, as Dr. Steele said. There's some stiffness in this or that joint when I awake. It takes me a bit to limber up after being sedentary. My sleeps are not as consistently deep and uninterrupted as I enjoyed for most of my life, except when mothering infants. I can't comfortably be on my feet for hours on end like I used to. I'm a little thicker around the waist. And I'm not in denial about my bodily deterioration that will continue as I grow older. I accept it as a fact of life. Having said that, for sure, it would be a gift to have inherited physical wellness genes from my mom, who still walks at least a kilometer each day when the weather permits, and despite her advanced macular degeneration, is able to care for herself in her own home. My mom also has excellent brain health and listens nonstop to audiobooks. She's the youngest of five sisters, who all passed away between the ages of 99 and 105. I may, of course, have inherited my dad's genes in this regard. He died from lung cancer at the age of 52, so his lifespan is not telling, but his three siblings died in their 80s. And anyway, genes don't solely tell the longevity story. Have I been as regularly active and eating as healthfully as my mother has all her life? Probably not. She grew up and matured in an era when food was much less processed and exercise was a normal required part of day-to-day life. For a good part of her life, plastic wasn't ubiquitous. What effect will the microplastic that's in my and your brain and bloodstream have on our healthy lifespan? I don't know. Scientists don't yet know. Unfortunately, in my opinion, the physical appearance consequences of aging are given way more attention in our society than the processes of healthfully growing older physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. I said earlier, speaking of myself, this old gray mare, she ain't what she used to be, but in all the ways that really matter, she's better. I ain't what I used to be physically, either in appearance or vigor, and while I will continue to prioritize healthful eating and exercising to retard my physical deterioration to the extent reasonably, but not obsessively possible, to my thinking, it's the other ways of growing older healthfully, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually that really matter. It's growing older in those ways that make us better than we used to be, that increasingly empower us to find happiness, fulfillment, meaning, and purpose through to the very end. Before going further, I want to make a distinction here between brain health and mental health. I said my mom enjoys good brain health, and what I mean by that is that she's not experiencing any form of brain damage or dementia, i.e. she isn't subject to any physical illness of the brain. I will also add that she does not experience mental illnesses such as depression or anxiety. An AI Google overview says, while brain health and mental health are distinct concepts, they're intricately connected. brain health is the state of the brain's function, while mental health is a person's emotional and psychological well-being. Brain health pertains to the brain's physical well-being, including how it functions in areas like cognition, social-emotional connections, and motor functions. Mental health pertains to a person's emotional, psychological, and social well-being, including how they think, feel, and act. Brain health and mental health are closely related and influence each other. A well-functioning brain helps regulate emotions and maintain mental stability. A person's mental health can impact their brain health and vice versa. For example, studies have shown that genes linked to good mental health may also affect a person's brain health. Personally, I like to think of the brain as a house and the mind as a home. So when I speak of unavoidable physical deterioration that comes with growing older, one aspect of it is the physical deterioration of the brain that results in such conditions as dementia. When I speak of growing older healthfully with regard to our mental, emotional, and spiritual aspects, I'm referring to aspects of the mind, not the brain, although as noted, it can be tricky teasing apart the two. So with that clarification, such as it is, I'm going to talk about the first power of growing older, using an analogy I've presented in a previous episode. How we humans grow older like a rose. Hopefully, it will also serve to further clarify the distinction between brain health and mental health. When I look out my front door, I see a wild rose bush across the driveway. In early spring, its deep green leaves sprout, followed thereafter by the budding of beautiful pink blooms. The fragrant, bright-colored blooms attract the pollinating insects. Over time, the blooms begin to fade, and eventually the petals turn brown and drop to the ground. Where the blooms were, rose hips form. As described by Google AI, I'm beginning to rely too heavily on AI, methinks. Rose hips are the pseudo-fruits of the rose plant and are small, round, and usually red or orange in color. They can be used to make tea, which has a floral flavor and a tart aftertaste. Rose hips can also be used to make oil for moisturizing skin and hair. They have many potential health benefits, having the properties of antioxidants and anti-inflammatories. They potentially support heart health, lowering cholesterol and blood pressure, and may help with weight loss. Rose hips contain fiber, vitamins A, C, and E. Like roses, we humans reach our prime, our bloom, the apex of our physical attractiveness, relatively early in life, being nature's way of attracting the opposite sex, pollinators, and ensuring the continuation of our species. Over the years, our bloom begins to fade. We lose our vibrancy and wrinkle up. After all, physical appearance isn't necessary anymore to aid reproduction. But, and it's a crucial but, even though we past primers no longer have direct value in reproduction for our species, our real value, our importance to our species has only increased. The value in the physical beauty of our youth has given way to our enhanced value as contributors to a better world. I think of the red berry-like rose hip that encases the many medicinal properties just mentioned as akin to our human brain, and the medicines within to our mind. Over the summer months, as the bloom decays and drops off, the rose hip develops, evolving into a source of nutrients for many. In addition to humans using rose hips, several types of birds and small and large animals eat rose hips over the fall and winter. That's the rose hip's offering to the world. Over the years, our human mind develops, evolving into a source of experiential and formally taught knowledge, which ideally translates into wisdom. Wisdom being the ability to use that knowledge in a practical way. As we grow older, by being open to new learning, we continuously have the opportunity to obtain ever more knowledge from formal educators, from our failures, mistakes, and successes, and in so doing, develop new wisdom right to the very end. The end is the moment we depart this mortal coil. Even when deteriorating brain or mental health no longer enables us to absorb new learning, we still have value in possessing and sharing to the extent possible already gathered knowledge. Sharing our knowledge, applying our wisdom is our offering to the world. And that offering, no matter how humble, only increases as we grow older. The power of increasing value, like a fine wine, perhaps made from rose hips, is the first power of growing older. Another power has to do with a three-letter word that, when appended to our remorse or disappointments, enables us to continue to look forward with eager anticipation to growing older. The three-letter word is yet. Consider the effect of appending that word to the following statements. I haven't learned to play a musical instrument yet. I've never been to the mountains yet. I haven't been able to forgive her yet. I've not learned to manage money very well yet. I don't know how to do woodworking yet. I don't have a handle on my anger yet. I don't have confidence in myself yet. I haven't found my reason for being yet. I don't love myself enough yet. Wow, the power of yet. It opens up the possibility of converting a regret, a neglect, hopelessness, or failure into a challenge, which, when pursued, enhances the quality of your life. Yet is self-affirming. It embodies hope, trust in the self, direction towards a goal, meaning, and purpose. It makes growing older exciting because only with growing older does yet have meaning. Only in the process of growing older do we have the ability to flip our life negatives into positives. With that, tick off another power of growing older, i.e. the power of possibility, and let's go on to the next. As suggested earlier, growing older beyond our prime equates to increasing physical incapacitation to some degree or another, which can also involve mental incapacitation, as the physical brain and mind are inextricably linked. It can definitely be a challenge to rise above the depression and anxiety that can accompany this physical and mental decline. I had a mild taste of that challenge quite recently. Only a few months prior to composing this episode, I returned from a month of touring about South America with my son, which at times involved me walking significant distances, carrying about 55 pounds in chest and backpacks. During the course of our traipsing about, due to the stress of the weight, I developed unrelenting pain in the heel of my left foot and the balls of my right foot. I was certain the conditions would heal once I returned home and was able to give my feet some rest. But weeks passed, and the pain was still incapacitating, preventing me from effectively tackling the demanding spring yard work and enjoying my daily walks. I sank into a mild depression, losing any interest in doing anything, not finding beauty in sunsets or happy anticipation in get-togethers with friends and family. When I finally took myself to the doctor, she diagnosed plantar fasciitis and metatarsalgia. With time and care, these would heal. I wondered how people with chronic pain who could not anticipate an end to it managed to function. Via my pain and incapacitation, life served me an empowering lesson once again. I was reminded that when faced with undesirable circumstances beyond our control to change, we are challenged to change ourselves, change our attitude. I was extremely fortunate to get relief from my depression by choosing to be grateful for the experience that provided me greater insight into the challenges of those suffering from chronic physical and/or mental pain, and by choosing to see it as an exercise of patience. That being my experience, I want to be very clear. I'm by no means suggesting that a change of attitude will cure the pain and suffering of anxiety or depression, but it may augment pain management and recovery. The experience also reminded me that growing older will bring about increasing physical incapacitation, and it can also bring about the power to choose my attitude to my evolving life circumstances. The power of attitude is the third power of growing older, should we choose to implement it. There is one more power to think about. Here in my home country of Canada, At the time of me composing this episode, the life expectancy of Canadians for both sexes combined is almost 83 years. Is that quite lengthy or quite short? In the big scheme of things, is that a significant or insignificant time period? Well, the answer to that question is what you choose it to be. If we consider it in comparison to other countries, Canada's life expectancy is shorter, Canadians rather, life expectancy is shorter than in 19 other countries, but longer than in the other 185 countries of the world. While I'm very grateful for Canada's healthcare system and availability of healthy foodstuffs and relatively clean environment, that comparison of longevity between countries doesn't do much for me. Let's look elsewhere to consider if your and my lifespan is significant or not. Into the biosphere. The mayfly is generally considered to have the shortest lifespan of any living organism, with most adult mayflies living only 24 hours. Some species may live as little as 5 minutes. Those 24 hours make our 727,000 hours, 83 years, seem pretty significant. At the other end of the spectrum, glass sponges are considered to be the oldest living organisms on Earth, with some estimates suggesting they can live for up to 15,000 years, or 146.4 million hours compared to our mere 727,000 hours. Now, let's peer into the inanimate world. A quark, being a type of elementary particle and a fundamental constituent of matter, i.e. one of the smallest building blocks of stuff, exists for only about 10 seconds before it decays. Whereas the universe, the largest thing we can consider, has so far existed for about 13.7 billion years, being way too many hours to wrap our minds around, and AI admits it's difficult to predict what the universe's exact age will be when it dies, but it's estimated that the last light will go out in about 100 trillion years, give or take. In consideration of all that, where do we humans stand with regard to the significance of our lifespan? From the perspective of the 24-hour living mayfly, our lifespan is more than 30,000 times longer than theirs. Never mind what our longevity looks like compared to the quark that reaches old age in less than 10 seconds. So relative to those guys, our species has a very, very long lifespan, regardless of what country you look at. On the other hand, ask the universe what it thinks about the significance of the human lifespan, and I'm quite certain it'd say, "What humans? I didn't see any humans. Must have blinked." So those comparisons don't really help much either to determine if your and my lives are significant. It can go either way, depending on the perspective you take. My life is very significant. My life is totally insignificant. Presumably, the mayfly and glass sponge, the quark and the universe, all exist long enough to serve their respective purposes, and that's significant. What can help to determine the significance of your life is your perspective of your life from where you are now relative to where you've been to get a handle on whether you're on track to have served your life purpose in the 83 or so years you're allotted. As we grow older, our perspective on our life broadens by taking in and learning from all that's gone before, like the view broadens the higher you climb the mountain. Combine this broadening perspective with the George Eliot quote, "It's never too late to be what you might have been," and it can serve your growing older well by helping you find your track, get on track, get back on track, stay on track to living as the person you were born to be, i.e. living a life of significance. That's it. The fourth and final power of growing older that I've talked about today is perspective, which broadens as we age. In summary, growing older can be empowering, even as our mortal body declines, if we recognize our increasing inherent value, think rosehip, create new possibilities, remember the power of yet, choose to adopt a wholesome attitude, and implement an enabling perspective. To put a sprinkle on this summary, as you may have known me to do from previous episodes of Better Me, Better World, I'm going to share a few quotes, other people's perspectives, that resonate with me regarding the topic of the day. You can't help getting older, but you don't have to get old. George Burns. The biggest lie about getting older is that excitement and growth end with youth. Mo. When you're getting older, you think about what you have to offer and what's the point of your life. Justin Chancellor. Why are people afraid of getting older? You feel wiser. You feel more mature. You feel like you know yourself better. You would trade that for softer skin? Not me. Anna Kournikova. I actually think there's an incredible amount of self-knowledge that comes with getting older. Jamie Lee Curtis. I think that's what makes life interesting, the evolution of getting older, and it's kind of fascinating to me, the whole process. Alexis Bledel. Since our society equates happiness with youth, we often assume that sorrow, quiet desperation, and hopelessness go hand in hand with getting older. They don't. Emotional pain or numbness are symptoms of living the wrong life, not a long life. Martha Beck. And finally, if you're always battling against getting older, you're always going to be unhappy because it's going to happen anyhow. Mitch Albom. And it has happened that we've come to the end of our time today. In this episode, we've considered how to be empowered through the process of growing older. I invite you to tune into the next episode of Better Me, Better World to consider how to keep ourselves well in an increasingly unwell world. I'll be back same time next week, same place here at CFRU 93.3 FM or CFRU.ca. The shows are recorded, so alternatively have a listen when it works best for you. Until next time, be you. I'm Annie Gigg.